Off the Ball Breakfast.
What's your favourite GAA chant?
Man, him. So three syllables.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Our Farney Army, do.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care. Proud sponsors of the British and Irish Lions. Upgrade to Dove Men Plus Care. Because care changes everything.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. You can WhatsApp us 0879 180 180. So the Lions have won the series against Australia 2-0. One test to come in Sydney, but a big victory, 29 points to 26 in Melbourne today. Five tries, Dan Sheehan, Tom Curry, Hugh Jones, Tadhg Byrne and Hugo Keenan. But they were 23-5 down and Keenan scored a try in the last couple of minutes to win it. Dramatic, a classic really at the MCG. And the Saturday Panel on Off the Ball brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care, proud sponsors of the British and Irish Lions. Upgrade to Dove Men Plus Care because care changes everything. We're delighted to have in studio Brent Pope and Brendan Fanning. We have Alan Quinlan on the line from Melbourne after 2 o'clock. Well, Brent and Brendan, that was a classic. It was over a month ago, the 20th of June, this started in Dublin. And I've been going, oh my God, this is taking forever. And now finally I was going, I'm exuberant because we had a game of rugby today.
Yeah, definitely. It would have been great in a way if the Aussies had won it and went with their test. And if you were on Sky, I'd say that was really what you were hoping for. But the next best thing was a meaningful game. And the one thing that the tour had been missing from the get-go was a little bit of jeopardy. Like, I remember, I don't know about Popey, but my earliest memories of the Lions as a kid are watching games where you were really on the edge of your seat all the time. And the record of the Lions in those years was not great, in fairness. So there was always a pretty good chance of them getting whooped. But there was just at no point, well, I guess up until the last few minutes, the last quarter of the First Nations game, you're thinking, okay, this might go south. But even if it did, I didn't feel that bothered. But today was absolutely full-on, gripping. It was everything you wanted in a test match. It was terrific.
Your initial thoughts, Brent,
exactly
on today?
The same as Brent's. I think the tour really needed this because you're quite right. I just went and watched it last week in the pub early. There was about five people watching it, so they had no real interest. When you get a tour that's so one-sided against a team that was, what, ranked sixth or seventh in the world at that stage, we all knew that it would be either a whitewash or a 2-1. That's what most of us felt. But today, with the difference was 90,000 people in Melbourne. I think it was great for Australian rugby because Australian rugby over the last few years has been dying a slow death by 1,000 cuts because all the top players are going back to league, or the money's in league, the money's elsewhere. So it really needed an injection of something, and the injection came through a great game, an old-fashioned, great ding-dong battle. How Australia let a 23-5 lead go, a better team wouldn't have. But then again, you know, the way that the Lions came back in the second half and took their opportunities, it really was a great game. It didn't really matter who won. I think you're right, the marketeers and the PR people would have been hoping it would have gone, the gravy train would have rolled on to Sydney. But that's the only shame. But overall, I think it's one game in too many tour games that meant nothing really. Effectively, if they tour New Zealand or South Africa or even France, they would get strong teams to play midweek. Now, that's not their fault, but, you know, you've only got to look at how the teams were performing, the Australian teams were performing in the Super 14, you know, as opposed to if they went out to New Zealand, they'd be playing the Hurricanes, Crusaders, Highlanders. If they're in South Africa, they'd be playing with the Stormers, all these teams that would soften them up. That was always the way with Lions tours. Teams softened them up before they got to the test match. That was their advantage. The advantage this time was fully with the Lions because they could bring all these number of players in to fill gaps along the tour. But I think we needed it. That's what I'm saying. It was a great game.
The Kiwis and the Saffers can afford to soften them up because they have enough players to go around.
Depth,
that isn't the case in Australia. So the Lions were whinging a bit about the quality of the game's early doors, and they were pointing to the tour agreement. And the tour agreement was that the Lions or the Aussies would put their best foot forward in those games en route to the first test within reason. Now, I think that within reason was the key phrase.
So, fair enough, Joe said, well, Lord, we don't have the players.
My reason is the test series. I'm not really all that bothered about what happens.
Yeah.
But the Lions are obviously interested in the overall product because that's what feeds them.
just on the game then, so three tries for each team in the first half. Aussies are 23-5 up, as you said. Was Will Skelton and Rob Ballantyne came back in today. Were they a big part of Australia's resurgence?
In the first half, they were amazing. Those two players, singularly those two players, were putting serious dents into the way that the Lions played. If you saw their defence structure in the first half vs the second half, completely different. Because when you have those big players coming at you, the defence was very closed in. It gave the Australians gaps. I mean, the Australians probably scored the best try of the game, which is the one from breaking up from just out of their 22. But that was only because Skelton and Valentini and these other players were just sucking in the Lions' defence system. So Lions couldn't have their sort of traditional rush speed on defence. So very much a game of two halves in all respects, in the sense that the Lions, you felt when they got into the Australian 22, they always scored, whereas the Australians had to manufacture their tries from multi-phase play. But I think Joe Schmidt needs some credit here for turning around the Australian rugby since the World Cup, because they were very unlucky against Ireland last year on the tour, and a couple of lucky wins like that. And he's only had a couple of weeks to bring this team together, and he suffered from injury. So to put up a performance like that, I think it's huge credit to him. But Lions just had too much depth, as Brendan said, too much depth to bring in players in their squad, especially in their scrum. Front row killed Australian today. You know,
it's not our front row as well.
Well, you're not going to win a match if you can't scrum. If every scrum results in a penalty, even the last minute, they were scrumming for a penalty to win the match.
Yeah, but that made the end game really interesting. If you remember, Piardi had to reset it at least once.
Yeah, time was ticking down.
It ended up, he gave a free kick to the Lions. And the Lions didn't want a free kick because under the new laws.
Do you think that was deliberate?
If you get it, well, I don't know. Yeah. And that was raised by Dan Bigger on the commentary. Yeah. Fair dues to them if they did. A bit of a stroke that the Aussies may have pulled, and if they did pull it, well, then fair dues, because it stopped the Lions doing what they wanted.
I thought the stroke they were going to play before that was Stewart was going to go off with the boot and Furlong was going to come back on again for the crucial scrum. That would have been a stroke. But even would have been a stroke when they, who was it we were saying, tried to milk the penalty at the last minute, the Aussie, when his hands went up to his head.
Yeah. Tizzano, yeah.
It was marginal, but
look, there are lots of things you could look at in that replay and focus on one or two.
On the margins, yeah.
And you come away with a
interpretation.
A specific idea. The one that stuck with me was as he was going to ground, he was already holding his head, and there was certainly a touch of theatrics about it. I thought fair dues to Jack Morgan. It's very, very difficult to be able to get to that low body height that he achieved and to stay on his feet until he had made the clean and then ended up off his feet. I thought what he
do
did.
Do you think, here's something.
I thought what he did
referee
was
referee psychology. Do you think if that had happened 10 minutes earlier, that he may have given a penalty to Australia? I think that all plays into the drama.
Well, this is the drama of it.
Well, the referee doesn't want to be seen to be the person that makes a decision that's marginal.
But it's going to twist the game.
That twists the game.
O'Gara made that point about somebody was done. I can't remember who it was. It was Stewart, I think, was done for rolling.
That's right, over twice.
Yeah, and it was kind of
marginal again.
1.5 rolls at most.
So referees are more conservative in the last play when everything's on the line. Yeah.
The other one we want to talk about just briefly, because nothing to do with the illegalities of the game, but Dan Sheehan's try concerned me a little bit.
When we all kind of lose a bit of a leap.
Because I don't, you know, it was legal and it's okay, but we don't want young players going out there doing the Dan Sheehan every week, which is a kind of a Batman. No, I'm serious about this, which is a situation where we see kids out there tapping the ball themselves and diving headlong like American football do over the top of them. Now, I'm not being an old fuddy-duddy. I just think that, yes, it was within the rules, and yes, it's a fair try, but we've got to look at situations like that. What we're saying to younger players is that that's the way over the try line when you see a bit of a gap.
You don't like the showmanship of it?
Doing a Dan Sheehan.
You've coined an out branch in the studio here. One hour after the Lions finishes.
I walked down the road after last week's hurling final. The number of young kids that were whacking a hurling, breaking windows all over the city. So I'm just worried that people are going to say, hey, this is the way forward now. We get a tap penalty 5 metres out. I'm just going to tap the ball. I'm going to Batman dive into the...
Just on, just as a sports person, Could you understand a collapse like that from Cork last week, from a psychology point of view? Can you understand?
I thought that was a fantastic. I couldn't believe it because I had friends up staying with me from Tip. They came over from Spain or whatever, and I just had to go out at halftime when Cork had scored the goal just before halftime. I said, "That's it, Cork are favourites. They've just got the goal." I said, "I'll just nip down to the shop and I'll come back." And I said, "Is this a replay from years ago?" Because it was suddenly 3 goals to Tip. I thought they were amazing in the second half, but yes, it was a real capitulation from the favourites. I don't know. They'll be looking at that long and how it just went. But things just started to unfold.
Yeah, sometimes it can happen that way. It goes against you.
And especially if you get the crowd, but like Australia today, if you get the crowd behind you and get momentum behind you,
people obsess, and people in our business obsess about what happens in the dressing room at halftime. And it's one of the first questions you hear immediately post.
When did you stop asking it?
It never was appropriate for, well, it was appropriate sometimes, but in that case, I did wonder what Cork said to themselves at halftime, and I wondered what the Lions said today at halftime. And the Cork situation, I would have thought the real dilemma, and it's a dilemma that people face all the time in sport. You're ahead. Do you keep doing what got you ahead, or do you shift tack and you shut up shop a little bit and just consolidate?
Yeah.
And if you roll that on a minute, then Patrick Horgan had a very gettable free from a guy who has a long history of getting frees, and he put it wide. That would have put them 7 points ahead. And I just wonder how much that played in the general scheme of things.
I felt a bit that today too, didn't you feel? I felt a bit that Australia were sort of, from about 65 minutes, they were really clinging on, you know, rather than trying to play the game that had got them that far. They'd shut up shop and were trying to protect a lead. And we all know what happens when you're trying to protect a lead. You know, when I was a coach like Brendan, the number of times I used to say to my players, the number of games that are won and lost in the last 5 minutes of a game, you know, is incredible. Because players can be give everything for 75 minutes, and then it comes down to one mistake or one thing in the last 5 minutes of the game. I don't know. And the same applies in the first 5 minutes of the game. So what are we doing the rest of the time?
But they actually did it at the end of the first half, you remember. They tried to wind down the clock.
That's right.
And referees hate it.
I know.
And referees are always on red alert for any offence in that wind down that they can blow. And the reason they were trying to do it, obviously, was that having established the 23-5 lead, suddenly the Lions came back and finished that.
Well, there were two crucial moments in that match, I think, the winning and losing of the match, and they both involved Curry. Curry's try just before halftime that got the Lions back into it psychologically. Then the Curry tackle on Swahili or whatever, and when they looked like they were going to score. If Australia had scored then, they would have won the match. He came from behind, which is a difficult. If we've got the ball in hand, it's difficult to get a tackle coming over your shoulder from the back. And those two instances, I think, changed the game. As did one little minute where Hugo Keenan tapped the ball back in when everybody thought it was going to be a 50-22. Those games are won by inches. It's the old, any given Sunday or something. Games are just inches. If you can find an inch here or there. And I think those three things, for me, were the difference in the game.
We're going to hear from Hugo Keenan now speaking to Will Greenwood on Sky Sports after his late try gave the Lions that victory. Have a listen.
It's class. It's a bit surreal. There was we were 23-5 points down, but we knew we had it in us at halftime. We had clawed it back, and Faz still believed in us. I think the players sort of had changed the momentum of the game, and we knew we still hadn't performed in that first half, and probably wasn't the performance we wanted in the second half either, but it definitely was the character, it was the grit, it was determination, it was the how many phases in that last set of plays, lads stepping up, some unbelievable moments. It's really cool to do in front of the 50,000 odd Lions fans to have family and friends over. It's one of the reasons you do this, isn't it?
Go in the history book, sort of Jan Evans and Jerry Guskett in 89, Matt Dawson in 97. This couldn't 2013, there's a bucket full in the third test. There aren't many who score the winner. I mean, were you the sort of kid who dreamt of these days, or you just keep turning up and hoping it'll happen?
Yeah, I suppose you don't really think of these things. Like with my try scoring record as well, I was probably the least likely to get it on the team. But no, absolutely, absolutely delighted. I think it was off the back of countless number of phases of people working incredibly hard, and yeah, it was a pretty cool moment and one I'll savour now, yeah.
From a nasty stomach bug when he was on the jacks to that.
Well, we hope he was on the jacks.
Yeah. So it's amazing for Hugo Keenan.
It was funny, in the aftermath, Henry Pollack was doing the worship routine with Keenan. Pollack, who has got a huge personality and has got little routines after he scores and whatever. And Keenan is not that sort of player. I'm not demeaning Pollack for a moment, and we'll get to him later. I think he should have been in the squad ahead of Jack Morgan, but that's for another day. I think it was fantastic for Keenan, A, given that he got over that debilitating illness, which would be head-wrecking for an athlete to know that you're losing that amount of body weight.
And he didn't have much weight in the first place.
When you need to stay in the whole of your health. And the second thing is, he had the confidence. It was him against Iketau at the end. And rather than just shift the ball or just kind of do meat and two veg, I'm just going to do the safe thing, he just went for the half break at the back of his mind, knowing that if this doesn't work out, I could turn the ball over here. I could be poached. And he got it 100% right, and he went for it, and he scored. It was just fantastic.
It's been a really consistent career for Hugo Keenan. Like, he's one of the first names in Farrell's team sheet with Ireland. Absolutely. And has delivered consistently
every
for a long
guy.
Time.
He delivers every game. I'm delighted for him. He's that type of guy that everybody would get on with on tour. Yeah. You know, he just fit in. He's not kind of loud. He's not front and centre of the attention. And he just does his job. There's no more reliable number 15 in world rugby than Keenan, I think. You know, every game he delivers. Now, they said he didn't deliver so much in the last game, but that was because he was recovering from an illness. But even that, I said that, even that ability to keep the ball in when it could have been a 50-22, when Australia were on top getting some momentum back, he changes games, and he's a languid type of runner from a sevens ability that doesn't seem to be moving very quickly, but he glides past the opposition. How many times meters has he made in games where you think, how's Keenan got through that gap in the fence? You know, because he's not a big physical player. He's not a Van der Merwe type of blockbusting player. He relies on a sort of guile and speed and consistency. So I'm delighted for him. And I mean, to be now go down on the sort of echelons of history of scoring a winning try in front of 90,000 people.
Studio's falling apart. Don't worry about it.
Look, we're going to sue. The cameras are going to drop down on our head.
We're okay.
Whose picture's falling
it's
down?
Okay. It's okay. I don't even know. Go on. I won't break your train of thought. Go on.
We're delighted for them. And I think the Irish players have all equipped themselves really well on this tour, and that's another thing. You know,
there were nine of them who started today. Could have been more if Ringrose was okay, but he obviously wasn't, and he'd a fair play to his call during the week.
Absolutely, there's another.
Look, I mean, it was a bit of hiding to nothing though. If we lost today, would it have been the Irish players, the British press? Would there have been the politics around that in the British press?
Yeah, there's lots of politics around Lions tours, and it starts with the selection pre-tour,
the nationalities,
and it continues then during the tour over. So-and-so should be dropped, and hey presto, I think one of our guys should be put in instead of him. It never stops. Absolutely never.
And you've been
stops.
On five of these tours, you know.
Yeah, and I remember even before I got into this business and I was going on Lions tours professionally, I'll never forget as long as I live, Kieran Fitzgerald was captain, and he shouldn't have been picked as captain, but he was picked as captain in 83 in NZ. And they settled on his line-out throwing. And every time he picked the ball up to throw into a line-out, you were going, oh, please God, make this go okay. And he was absolutely torn to shreds by the English media because Peter Wheeler, who was the England hooker at the time and who was technically probably a better hooker than Kieran Fitzgerald.
A bigger guy too.
Had been left out. So there is always politics around this for sure.
Yeah.
And there's always politics with the coaches because as soon as a coach gets selected, he brings his own personnel in.
So Johnny Saxon's there.
Simon needs to be the video, Harmon, the video guy, the Fogarty. So they all these people, same as Gatland did, same as Woodward did before that. But I just think that, you always have a balance, a set of scales to say, do we pick a team that everybody wants to see from a marketing point of view, or do we pick a team to win?
Yeah.
Because there's been some criticism over this tour, and I get it. There's been some criticism over Farrell joining the tour. There's been some criticism of bringing the Scottish Five or whatever over to win Lions caps that some fantastic players over the years never got to be capped. There's even talk now of saying, you know, if they win the final test, is an unbeaten tour after losing to Argentina? Do they count that as part of the tour or not? So is it an unbeaten tour? I don't know what that answer is, because if they take the Argentinian game as a isolated one-off, then yes, it's an unbeaten tour. But if they take it as a whole games they played for the Lions, then it's not unbeaten. But you're always going to get those kind of idiosyncrasies around the game. I don't know what you think. Is an unbeaten
tour? The tour starts when you arrive in the chosen country. Yeah, whatever happens before that happens before that.
Yeah.
Context is everything, and Australia...
But then do Lions players...
Are they really not within an ass's roar of New Zealand or South Africa currently, so everything is relative.
Okay, we talked about Keenan. How did the other Irish players do? Byrne and Sheehan got
prized. Byrne was great. Sheehan was great. Furlong was great. Bundiaki had his moments, was great when he needed to be. I thought they all performed.
Ty Byrne played out of his skin.
Yeah.
Again.
And interestingly, doing so at six. And I would have contended for quite a while that he was the best six in the country when Peter O'Mahony was being picked at six. But
Peter O'Mahony was getting his game
because he was a big personality and clearly a very good rugby player. But I always reckoned that the best six available was Tadhg Byrne.
Now, I'd have to say, he started off, he wasn't having his best tour. I'd have to admit that, and I said it in the media. I said Tadhg Byrne was lucky to get the call up in that position last week, and it was a bit about, I would have thought he would have gone for Ollie Chesham based on form, but what Farrell did was he knew the player and he knew he could deliver in the big games, and man, he did. Same as Gibson. But Gibson Park's probably been the outstanding player right through the whole series. But all the other Irish, really, but even when Ryan came on.
The interesting thing, John, is going to be the knock-on effect for Ireland. I would say two things. One, the impact for the November series would probably be negative. I'd say they're wrecked by the time they get back after this.
And they've got to go to Chicago as well.
If you go back to last year.
Socialising after the storm.
I think it was mid-August when the Leinster guys, after the summer tour, were rocking back up again to start their pre-season. And these guys will be given probably 5 weeks, and then they're going to be straight back into it. And I can't imagine that there isn't a hangover for the Irish contingent. Probably coaches as well as players.
Absolutely.
But it seems like a 12-month year.
If you run through to the Six Nations, you would expect a benefit to be seen. And beyond that, you can't bring that number of people away across the board, from coaches to logistics to players, in a hothouse, high performance environment like that, and not learn a load. So that
maybe not in the immediate term, but maybe for the World Cup, it'll be a good thing.
Everything that they've picked up here, you would hope, becomes refreshed and is really bedded in and used when they get back.
What worries me,
there will be a hangover, but once that clears, they should be fine.
What worries me a bit is on two fronts. Is, yes, you used a lot of Irish players on this tour. What worries me for the World Cup perspective, because that's the monkey that Ireland desperately want off their back, is the rise on some of the English players, the England tour that performed well in Argentina, all these new batch of young players coming through. Also in France, their tour to New Zealand, where some of these younger guys again really performed. My worry for Irish rugby is these guys have had a lot of rugby over the last couple of years. Some of them are getting to the winter of their careers anyway, age-wise. I mean, is Bundy still around at next World Cup? Is Gibson Park still around at next Cup? I don't think we discovered much, obviously, in those 100-point wins against, you know, Portugal, or the win against Georgia. I don't think we discovered much that we didn't already know. And, you know, you start winding down the clock about 2 years before World Cup. It's not good enough just to say, the World Cup is next year. They've got to start to be building to who are these new faces in Irish rugby going to be next season? And you've got games away against, of course, Six Nations next year is away to England and away to France. So, albeit on a Thursday night. But they would worry me from a World Cup point of view. Also, what would worry me from a World Cup point of view is I think Australia can get better. And I think if they get some of their players back, they just prove that if they're heavily reliant on a few key players, but if they can attract some more players from this type of game or this type of crowds, you're going to get a lot of people, rugby league guys, looking around at that game saying, 90,000 people? Wow. The atmosphere that was there, singing the national anthem, playing for your country, could pepper some players to start taking up rugby.
Okay, got to take a break. We'll have your thoughts on that, Brendan, after the news. Brendan Fanning and Brent Pope in studio, and Alan Quinlan on the line from Melbourne on the Lions series win after this.
The road to Croke Park has featured big two-pointers, late drama, and a wrong turn, and Enna Skillen.
You drove almost a sixth of the way across the country in the wrong direction!
Ahead of Sunday's All-Ireland final clash of Donegal and Kerry, relive the full story of this year's football championship with a new three-part podcast. The Road to Croke Park, the football championship. Available for free in your OTB GAA and football pod feeds.
This is Off the Ball Saturday. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball is brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care, proud sponsors of the British and Irish Lions. Upgrade to Dove Men Plus Care because care changes everything. Delighted to have in studio, after that win for the Lions in the second test against Australia in Melbourne, a narrow win as well, 29 points to 26. We have the ex-St Mary's AIL winning coach, a legendary pundit and former player in New Zealand, Brent Pope. And we've got the author and journalist, Brendan Fanning, in the studio, hoping to have Alan Quinlan on the line from Melbourne very shortly. Nice comments in here, Brent. Pope is class. Get him on regularly.
Yes.
Says Barry.
Thanks, Mum.
And
says Barry Pope.
It says Barry Pope.
And Joseph, Brendan Pope is an outstanding analyst. So that's another one we got.
That must be another guy.
Yeah. So... we also have comments as well, and they're really pleased for Hugo Keenan. Took a lot of stick, but coming back from illness that would have knocked the rest of us for weeks. Well said, Andy, there on our YouTube channel. And another one, Byrne and Kerry have made some combo in the back row. We've Andy Farrell, a vindicated, victorious Andy Farrell, speaking to Sky Sports. Let's hear from him now.
Oh, wow. It was never in doubt, was it? Wow, it's amazing. I mean, you know, the occasion and the fans all travelling out here, they all deserve this, don't they? You know, they all deserve a grandstand finish like that. You know, this is what Lions rugby is all about, and that's why they come in the thousands. So absolutely delighted for everyone that made the effort.
I mean, you joke, never in doubt, but what a test match. Everyone gripped. How was it for you watching on with your staff?
Well, obviously, weren't too great in the first half, especially, you know, how we started in comparison to last week. Back-to-back penalties, yellow cards, very costly, obviously, on the scoreboard. But we found a way to get back into the game, and that obviously gave us the confidence to go and stay in the game and take the game to them in the second half. And you just felt that if we had a little bit of pressure and we could get into the 22, which we did on three or four occasions and scored every single time, so we knew that it was in us. But... wow, what a finish, what a finish. I was screaming, pass it to Hugo, but he was never going to pass it, was he?
Andy Farrell can drop the mic now, lads. Series win as a Lions coach down in Australia. Obviously, Grand Slams with Ireland. I mean, 10 years on, I mean, he was part of Lancaster's coaching team, didn't get out of a World Cup group, so stick at it, I suppose, is the message, maybe.
Well, he's a magnificent coach, you know. He's one of the world's best coaches at the moment, let's face it. But I think that, you know, anything other than a series win this particular time would have been deemed as, I suppose, a failure on this tour. Let's face it, you know, where they were going out to play. You've got to take the opposition into account, and perhaps the opposition played out of their skins today. But as a tour, you know, what we were saying before, they really needed this match. And you can tell that he's grateful for it now. Okay, yes, he's ended up on the winning side, so he can say that. But I think it really meant a lot for the touring party. It really meant a lot for the people coming out just to be at that one game. They took a look back, and that'll have memories for the rest of their lives. Some people that were one of that 90,000 or something at this game where the Lions played a coach. It wouldn't have been the same if the Lions had won 30 points to 10 or whatever. It wouldn't have been the same. So you always look forward to those matches. I can always talk about the matches being over when Ireland first beat the All Blacks. It wasn't. It was just being there was the memory, you know.
Yeah.
So we need to create
those. It would have been interesting if it had gone to a third test. Well, it will go to a third test, but a live third test. If all it would have taken is a couple of refereeing decisions. There were serious questions over two of the tries, particularly the the Sheehan one and then the Jack Morgan clear out, they could have gone the other direction easily on another day. Wallabies would have survived. And suddenly Farrell is looking at a squad who have failed to do what they wanted to do, close the deal in two tests,
yeah.
Plus tail end of a season. That's when fatigue really kicks in, is in that last week of a long tour like that. And it would have been interesting to see how he handled that. But in fairness, the high performance, the detail that the Lions have brought to this, irrespective of what the Aussies threw at them, the detail's been absolutely first class right across the board, from their nutrition, from their research. Everything about it has been absolute top of the range, which brings us to the third test and selection.
And so how do you think Australia
How do you think he's going to pick a third test team? Is he going to go...
Be political?
Well, what do you
think? Well, he wants a clean sweep. But the question goes back, how do you think Joe is going to deal with it? Do you think the Aussies will be up for it as much as they were in this, or do you think they'll just tuck the tail between their legs or whatever and say, look, let's just finish it off and give it a go for...
Well, the Aussie public will fold their tent and move on to something else.
That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. But how does Joe view this? I mean, how does he pepper his players up? It's not good enough just to say, oh, well, look, we want to avoid a whitewash. When you take any nation of people or any followers of sport out of the mix to win something, if it's only for pride, then it's a lesser...
Is the emotional pitch, though, was reached today? It's very hard, maybe.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Raise that again for another week.
It is going to be hard for them to raise that again. Yet they wouldn't have had any problem raising it if it had gone to a decider. They would have then said, hold on.
And they would even fancier chances of winning.
You won't struggle to get tickets for Sydney, that's for sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They wouldn't have struggled to get that momentum and say, hey, we've turned this around as a nation, or as a sporting nation. I mean, there's no better sporting nation in the world, as you know, than the Aussies. But whether or not they want to play out a sort of a fruitless rubber in a sense, I don't know. I don't know how Joe gets them up for this next match.
Okay.
Let alone he's got injuries still from Skelton and these type of players and Bob Valentini.
Stick on your headphones there, guys. We have Alan Quinlan on the line from Melbourne. Quinny, good day.
Good day, mate.
How you doing, Quinny?
I'm good, lads. Yep, just back at the hotel now after...
Don't be fibbing.
Mad, crazy match, really, wasn't it?
Going off nightclubbing.
No, not yet, Joe. Not yet, Brent. Not yet.
Okay, well, after this, maybe, Quinny. So, Quinny, what did you see in the stadium? I always ask this question for people who are there that we didn't see on the TV.
Yeah, I'm sure the lads have mentioned it there about that emotion that Australia, you just sensed that there was a different atmosphere for this one. The emotional pitch that you felt they needed was right up there. You could see in their body language. I watched them leaving the hotel here this evening. They looked really up for it, and they brought a great intensity, particularly in that first half, and just ran out of steam in the end, I think. They probably kicked too much in the end. They were tired, fatigued. I suppose Valentini gone off, Skelton gone off, changed things a little bit for them. And the Lions bench probably added impetus and power and strength for on their behalf. So, yeah, their shape was a lot better, John. I think if you're obviously you see different things at the game when you have a wider view of the whole thing. But they had a lot more intensity to what they were doing, particularly around the breakdown. Their urgency to clean players out and just secure good ball for themselves. And I think if Australia win that game, Jake Gordon is probably player of the match. He was outstanding, their scrum half. And I think Lina had a lot more time on the ball this week, and that allowed him to play. Suali, he was brilliant as well, and Ikitau. So they got the players who have that X factor to get their hands on the ball a lot, and it made a real difference for them. But you still felt that, I think it was 23-5 at one stage? And you just still felt, I think Lionel knocks the ball on from a box kick.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even being challenged. It was a big mistake. And I think Piardi then gave a long advantage for a knock on. I think that was a big changing point. And then Curry scores in the corner, doesn't he? Gives them belief. Then they score pretty much straight away after again. So that was kind of the crucial period. Things were going well for Australia. Freeman was in the bin. So I was very impressed with the way they played in the first half. And they were a lot more accurate. And I said this to you last week. I'm sure that the lads not sure if they do agree or not, but going into a test series when having just played Fiji is ludicrous, really. And I think Australia were better this week from the game last week to learn match intensity, all that kind of stuff was much higher this week. But yeah, I think their whole attack shape, they started to find gaps and space. But then when you look at the stats at the end, Australia had more territory, more possession, but it was the Lions that scored 5 tries. So that was the significant part of it. And I think Australia only scored, was it 3 points in the second half? So that's the second half was where we felt maybe at half time that they were going to come unstuck a little bit, and that was going to be the real test for them.
Quinny, you've been to a lot of big matches and a lot of big crowds. You know, I'm not sure you've been to one with over 90,000 people. What was the kind of buy-in from the Aussie public for this match? You know, what was the atmosphere like? Was it one of the greatest atmospheres before match? But certainly what was being televised back to us was there was a fantastic atmosphere pre-game, but I wonder whether that was bought by the Lions supporters, or how did the Aussies buy in that you were talking to on the street? Because I've been to Melbourne before and sometimes they say, look, is there a game of rugby on in town? They don't buy into it, but they obviously looked to be a great atmosphere.
There was a great atmosphere, but the Lions supporters far outnumbered Australian supporters there. It was, there's a guy on the mic, he's doing announcements during the game and he's wanted to know, you know, calling the Wallaby fans to cheer. And then he's asking the Lions, is there anyone from Ireland, anyone from Scotland, anyone from England, anyone from Wales? And then at the end he goes, any Wallabies here? And the Lions start screaming and shouting. And they honestly, it was the whole show beforehand and the lights and all that and the way they announced the teams. They announced, you know, Andrew Porter first and then James Slipper and then it's the hookers and then it's the tight head. And I thought it was brilliant. It was a great show beforehand. The atmosphere was better, Brent. There was obviously plenty of Aussies there, but they were outnumbered by Lions fans. There was over 90,000 people there. I think the official attendance was 90,337 or something like that. So it was a great atmosphere. But what Australia did really well in the first half was they quietened that Lions crowd. They were in a bit of shock, really. And but then, they, you know, every time Lions scored a try or got themselves back, you sensed the atmosphere. So far more Lions as fans there. I was speaking to someone in the hotel last night and he said it's all AFL here. There's three AFL games a week and there's about 10 teams in Melbourne and it's just at a different level. So obviously it's a massive challenge for them. Tonight would have been significant if they'd won that test and brought it to Sydney next week for Australian rugby. I still think they can take a fair bit out of it. You know, they're playing 4 nations, very undercooked and coming into this. Couple of players who are coming back from injury again. Their match fitness was not at a high level. So, I think it was inevitable in the end and there was no Australians leaving kind of going. They felt that there was an opportunity missed. And I think that was a probably an 8 or 9 out of 10 performance for most of the match out of Australia. And I think the Lions were probably 6, 7 out of 10. They struck and punished and were ruthless it was a great game to watch. It was great excitement, obviously. And then the drama at the end, Hugo Keane's try, what a finish, what a step to get over the line. But the power and that physical presence told, particularly with what came off the Lions bench.
So the Lions got away with it a bit, Quinny, as opposed to winning it like champions.
Yeah. Well, if you look at Finn Russell, he didn't have a good game. He made a lot of mistakes. I think they harassed and harried him a lot. Bundiaki had some really big moments, but a couple of mistakes as well. I think the Lions missed 39 tackles in the game. You know, that's not a good return for a defensive system that was very strong last week. So Australia found little pockets and holes and their individuals kind of excelled and caused the Lions problems. I wouldn't be critical of the Lions' performance. I'd be more complimentary of what Australia did, but it still just wasn't good enough.
Quinny mentioned that Jake Gordon could have been in slightly different circumstances, man of the match. I just looked at Gordon and Lina and thought how comfortable they were a week after a first test where God love the two of them. They were behind a pack. They were getting battered. Every time the Aussies carried a week ago, they were losing every collision. First half tonight, they were winning all those collisions. One out rugby didn't allow the Lions get any decent line speed. And suddenly Gordon looked like a player who was just going to own the whole show. At that stage, Quinny, when you were watching that, were you thinking they're not going to keep this going up beyond 60 minutes? They're going to run out of gas? Or did you think, you know what, this could be one all at the end of the day?
I thought, Brendan, that I always had that fear that they'd kind of got to a level that they wouldn't be able to sustain. They looked tired at periods there, particularly in the second half, and they looked fatigued. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought changing the two props at halftime, I would have waited till the 50th minute, because I think Alalatoa is a workhorse. Slipper is not the same player he was. He's over 140 tests for Australia, but I would have waited for another 10 minutes and try and go like for like when the Lions were bringing on their front row players. They went early. Okay, they tried it. It's easy said in hindsight now. But going back to your question as well, John, what I saw at the stadium was Australia, and I don't know if you noticed this on TV, they were very shrewd in, you mentioned the line speed there, Brendan, of the Lions last week. They hit up the middle, then they went back blindside, then they went back middle again. And that does stop an aggressive line speed. You know, if you keep going the same way, it's easy fold around and just sprint off the line. So it just checked the Lions' defence a lot. So that was very shrewd tactical change from last week. But I just had the feeling that, and the Lions were sloppy at times, and Australia came up with big turnovers. I thought when they got the penalty from Maro Itoje, I thought they were going to have a shot at goal and go a point in front. They didn't. They chose to go to the corner, and Tizani got a brilliant turnover penalty for Australia. So I started to feel in the last 10 minutes that Australia were going to win this. You know, there was only 2 points in it, and they defended so heroically. But I ultimately, that bit of match sharpness, battle hardness, and fitness, match practice had its toll on Australia, I think, in the end.
Big moments for the Irish individual players. Hugo Keenan, as you mentioned there, with a try he'll remember for the rest of his life. Tadhg Byrne with a try. Dan Sheehan yet with another try. Other performances as well. And Farrell as well, as the Irish coach, has got a Lions series win with one test to go.
Yeah, it's one that everyone expected. Let's be honest about it. We expect them to win the series here. There's probably for the last 18 months, you've heard the term 3-0 to the Lions a lot. I think for tonight, you know, if Australia had won the game, it would have made it unbelievably exciting for next week. I still think they would have won the series, even if Australia won tonight. Tonight was the big night for Australia, and they just came up short. But you have to give credit to Andy Farrell. The resources they have, obviously, are phenomenal. You see the backroom staff. There's so many coaches. There's so many medical people. There's so many liaison officers. The resources are there for them to, you know, put in place. And then this is their ninth match. So, you know, bar the Argentina one, the preparation has been perfect for them. They didn't get any kind of incredible, outstanding performance in the warm-up games. They got some really big moments and periods in those games, but I think it was a perfect preparation, and he's managed that well. You know, he's had a few question marks about bringing in his son, bringing in, you know, a lot of Irish staff. Three or four Scottish players came in last week as well for that that game against Pacifica. So he had the luxury of protecting a lot of the players during the week for that game. And, you know, he's got the result in the end. Ultimately, he's won a series now, Andy Farrell. He deserves a lot of credit for that.
It sounds like, Quinny, that for the people down there, it's a big jolly. Everybody's having a great time, those Lions fans.
Well, I've said this before. It's strange. You go to an Ireland game, whether I'm commentating, right, okay, if I'm not commentating and I'm a fan and I want Ireland to win and I'm very invested and all the Irish fans are different, and it's the same for the other countries. For the Lions, you just feel it's not the end of the world if they don't win. They're on the jolly, they're on a tour, they're on a trip of a lifetime. You've been there, Pope. We were in New Zealand in 2017 and Australia in 2013.
Exactly.
They leave the stadium, and if they lose the test, it's kind of, what pub are we going to, and where's the party, and where are we going during the week? But still, look, obviously, they got behind the team tonight, and you saw the scenes at the end, and it means a lot to the players, and so much history and tradition with the Lions, putting on a Lions jersey and being part of a squad. So, you know, they got the job done. We expected them to do that. I think it would have been, from a neutral's point of view, to see it going to third test next week would have been great. That's the intrigue, is what happens now. Does Andy Farrell make a lot of changes? Does Joe Schmidt try and avoid the whitewash? Does he make some changes? I think they'll, you know, depending on the injuries, I think, not sure what happened. Valentini, he went off at half time. I thought there was another, maybe that was the plan beforehand. To be fair, Gleeson is a very good player, Langi Gleeson, and he was very good when he came on. He had some explosive moments. But going with 6-2 as well, it kind of didn't help him that Harry Potter went off and they had to put Tate McDermott on the wing. He's a live wire, isn't he?
He nearly scored a try.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's a live wire. So, look, I think it could have went the other way. And if you look at the stats, they had more carries, more passes, more post-contact meters, Australia. And amazingly, at the start of the game, I thought this is going to be kick fest. It's going to be box kick, box kick, box kick. Both sides only kicked the ball 20 times each. So that's quite a low number. So it was a brilliant game. It was a brilliant game. And to be fair, Australia, as I said, they built on maybe the frustration and disappointment of last week, and they were a lot better. And credit to the Lions, though, they found a way at the end. And you know, what a try to score for Hugo Keane, and what a moment. He will remember that for the rest of his life.
Who should be featuring then in the third test? Anybody that should be coming in? Or should he make whole changes?
No, he won't. Because you're on an unbeaten tour now. I mean, you're one game away from being able to come back and say, you know, we went through Australia unbeaten. That's why I was questioning whether
the Dublin game,
But that doesn't matter. So he's not going to make it. Ringrose might come in, might swap Bundy out to something. He's not going to lose a lot, whatever selection he makes. I don't think he's going to give free gratis to those players that have done so well on tour, to give them a sort of a reward of giving them a test. No, it's not a dead rubber completely for Farrell and the team. They want to go through this tour unbeaten now. If there'd been a loss earlier on, then it would make a big difference. He'd say, look, we've won the series, we've had a loss, it can't be unbeaten, so we'll give these other guys a go. That would be my thinking if I was a coach.
Yeah, well, Alan referred to the sheer scale of the Lions operation down there. There are 90 people involved between players and support staff. No. 90. So there was a very good article during the week in The Telegraph, an interview with Alad Walters, who's head of performance in Ireland.
Right place, Simon, he's to be.
And, well, I think it's unlikely. But everything, every box is ticked, every I is dotted, every T is crossed. The nutrition, the data, the research, the prep, everything is looked after. And they've lots of people whose job it is to make sure that they keep their end up. If that's the environment that you're in, you can't then turn around for the third test, whether it's a dead rubber or not, and suddenly start giving out caps to the lads. That just isn't, you can't disrespect the whole principle of high performance. And that Farrell and co are making their names on respecting high performance.
This is just comparable to a Six Nations campaign, a World Cup campaign.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
You play your strongest team.
I think the scale of the achievement of remaining unbeaten in Australia, it's relative. Australia are not a big hitter currently, so you have to look at it through that lens. But that doesn't mean that you roll back on your principles. And your principles are, we go out to pick the most appropriate team, and 99.9% of that time, of the time, it is absolutely the best players to go out. You may suddenly decide to rest a guy because he's absolutely wrecked after the first two tests, and the bloke you're bringing in is 97% as good as him. That's not a big deal.
Like, he could bring Ringrose in and nobody would mind. He could bring Ringrose in and nobody would mind. If McCarthy is fit, he could bring him back in. So he's got that luxury because, as Brendan said, he's going to replace like with like. You know, there's not much difference between Hugh Jones and Gary Ringrose. Ringrose is probably ahead of him in the pecking order anyway.
Rattis,
so he comes in. Ellis Genge could come in. Morgan could perhaps come in. Emotionally for the Welsh side of it, but there'll only be two or three changes, then it'll be due to the strongest team.
It was only four test wins in 50 years for the Lions, to remember that as well. Quinny, do you agree with the lads? You don't see much change for next week?
Yeah, I think you could. There's a couple of players, as the lads mentioned, that you could have their like for like. Jack Morgan could come in for Tom Curry. You know, I'd love to see Josh Van der Fleer get a yeah. game or be involved in the squad. I think he may change up the bench a little bit. Jack Conan, honestly, was outstanding tonight. Just hard yards, making lots of carries, big tackles, really physical again. So would he change him and put Ben Earl in at eight? Earl is a great player. And I was probably debating the back row from the start. Between all the back row players, there's very, very little between any of them. So that might be an area he might change things. But yeah, I don't see significant changes. I think, Bundiacki was kind of holding his calf at the end of the game. Tupolotto could come back in. And as Brent said, Gary Ringrose. But I don't see wholesale changes. It depends how some of the players kind of feel after the game. Are they carrying knocks and bangs? But I think they'll look at this and they won't just start throwing out, here's test caps for you next week for the sake of it. I think it'll be mainly down to the medical side of things, or just tweaking one or two players who are very familiar in their level of performance.
Let's hear now from Joe Schmidt speaking to Sky Sports after Australia's defeat to the Lions.
Yeah, probably not at the finish. That's a pretty tough one to take. Leading for 79 minutes and getting a decision at the end that leaves us a little bit forlorn. But I'm really proud of the way the players played. I felt they fought their way back into last week's game, and they showed some real mettle today as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've talked a lot about this being a side in development, a growing team, but it certainly didn't look like that. They showed so much fight and bravery, like you say.
Yeah, and they showed it that they could play the game as well. I felt that we got some space on the edges, got some space through the middle, and we looked an attacking threat. And the Lions are a really good side, and congratulations to them on the winning the series tonight. And I guess for us, we've just got to dust ourselves off and keep working to try to improve our performances as we go along.
Quinn, you talked about the kind of support and the fact that the Lions fans are loving it. What's been the coverage of Australia down there and Joe Schmidt? Has it been, you know, somewhere inside the sports section? Has it been on the back pages? Has it been much TV coverage? Has it been a big deal? Or has it been a bit, okay?
Well, it's so much sport and it's down the pecking order, isn't it? Even a big series like this, I think everyone's very aware of it. It's probably a couple of pages in. It's not on the back pages, but I think Joe's well got here. I think he's very popular. I think the players seem at ease with him. He seems very relaxed. Their whole camp was very, very open. Players walking around the hotel all week, coaches walking around, stopping, chatting to Lions supporters and stuff. So he seemed very relaxed. Obviously, he's fuming. The decision at the end, I'm not sure if the lads debated it. It was... Initially, I thought they're in trouble. He's gonna change this here with the clean out. But I think Piardi's description of what he saw was probably a fair one. I don't think it's Jack Morgan flying off his feet with a shoulder into the back of the head. I don't know what the lads think, but he probably got it right. He could have went the other way if he disallowed the try and give Australia a penalty there. Well, Andy Farrell probably would be one that would be fuming with that. So, just to probably elaborate more on your question, yeah, I think it's, look, as I said, there's three AFL games here a week in Melbourne. 40,000-50,000 go to them. And that's where it's at really here. It was similar up in Brisbane. It's a constant battle for Union here to try and take on the other sports, NRL, AFL and cricket. So they're down the pecking order. But yeah, you still meet lots of good rugby people here and people are very passionate about their rugby. So that kind of challenge is ongoing for them. It would have been really significant here. There is plenty of coverage of it, of course. They've pushed this out there because of the magnitude of a Lions series and so many tourists coming in to support this team. It has been on a lot of coverage on sports channels and reruns on Stan Sport of all the games, last week's game. It's continuously been shown. So there is plenty of coverage of it, to be fair. But they still have their challenges with the other sports.
Before we let you go, Quinny, you've had a good week. Tipperary All-Ireland champions.
Yeah, I was shocked last week.
Did you go to the casino?
I've been there. My young fella's with me, Poppy.
Oh, okay.
AJ, I brought him. So I surprised him on the Sunday before my Wednesday departure that he was coming to Australia with me. So
class.
It's a quieter tour for me. If I'm not a big, as you know as well, and don't start laughing, I'm not a big drinker.
No, you're not.
I'll have a few, an odd night here and there for sure. But it's a different tour. But I have been to the casino, went over for a little bit of food there and a walk around. But when you're going around,
as you do, that's why everyone goes to casinos, Quinny. Well, a bit of food and a walk around.
Brendan, should know. You've probably been in the Crown Casino in Melbourne.
It takes you about half an hour to walk through the place.
Exactly. It's massive. It's not just the gambling part of it. There's restaurants, shops, everything. There's loads of stuff. There's music.
There's a museum there. There's art.
Postcards and...
Yep. Yeah, Frankie Sheehan had a good win there.
We were just talking about that beforehand.
At the World Cup, he won over 90,000. He might be okay to say it now, I think.
He was telling everyone it was $9,000.
Right.
Yeah, Frankie had a great win when we were at the World Cup there. That was the week of I got my injury in Adelaide, and then we flew to Melbourne, and Eddie O'Sullivan allowed me stay on for a week. The Melbourne Cup was on. The AFL was on.
Oh, that's right.
And the compromise rules.
Yeah, the same weekend.
Compromise rules were on in the G. It was an unbelievable.
Incredible week for sport and for Frankie as well.
And there was the casino as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, Frankie at the casino. So,
well, enjoy yourself, Quinny.
Yeah. On to Sydney next week, yeah. So hopefully someone will stir the pot a little bit and there'll be a bit of intensity to the last test. But... yeah, well done to the Lions. They won it, and Andy Farrell.
Well done, Quinny. Thank you.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Cheers.
Alan Quinlan live from Melbourne there, where it's getting pretty late now. Brendan Fanning and Brent Pope, just before we finish up. Look, I'm interested in going to New Zealand, I have to say, in 2029, because I suppose to me that's the mythical.
Oh, yeah.
That's the mythical thing. When you were growing up, it was a big thing.
Yeah.
In New Zealand.
I'll get your tickets.
Oh, great. Thanks, Brent.
You can come and stay there.
It was a big thing when you were... a young lad that the Lions came over,
All these players that go back, I mean, we're just talking about, you know, especially the Welsh players, because they were at their kind of zenith in those days, you know, Gareth Edwards and Barry John and Mike Gibson. These were all players that, you know, that I looked up to. But I remember getting through the little fit. They played a Lions match against Mid and South Canterbury. I come from just a small rural area called Ashburton, but I remember getting through the, not paying and getting through the fence, you know, to watch the matches with all my mates. But no, love the Lions. And I think it still remains the toughest tour. South Africans might disagree over the number of years, but because of the kind of, that it's the sort of number one sport and you can travel down the whole country to different games, it makes it really memorable. You know, maybe a bit boring for some of the supporters because New Zealand are pretty one-eyed when it comes to rugby. But man, it's a tough tour when you're playing teams like sort of Auckland or Wellington, Highlanders midweek, you know, they really test a touring side. So that's the one to look forward to. I think I might go out in that one myself.
You've been on five of them, Brandon.
Yeah. And luckily, I was on the one in 97, which was a game changer because the game had just gone pro and nobody knew if there would be a place in the new world order for Lions. And I'll never forget, I had no idea how many people were going to travel on that tour. There was a massive, massive crowd, especially from Wales.
Who was on that tour? Who were the type of players on that tour? Irish players were on that 97.
Paul Wallace was
Keith Wood was the undisputed star. Jeremy Davidson was on it. Right. Eric Miller was on it.
Eric Miller, yeah.
Paul Wallace was on it.
Paul Wallace.
That was South Africa or New Zealand?
South Africa.
Of course. So the Six Nations looked at that and said, well, Five Nations at that stage, soon to be the Six Nations, looked at that and said, yeah, this thing could really, really make money. And that's what's driven it, is the commercial stuff that goes on around it. Not just the number of fans who travel, and it's a huge bonus for the host country, but also given the amount of money that they make in the additional revenue.
And how many jerseys are sold for this tour?
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of jerseys. You've got a book coming out, by the way, Brendan.
I have, in October. It's called Touching Distance.
Yeah.
And it picks up pretty much from 2007. My first book covered the madness of the early Doors and professionalism up to 2007. It takes up the story of Irish rugby in the period since then, and the ups and downs and highs and lows and whatever. So yeah, it's done and it'll be out in October.
And what's the biggest low? The last World Cup, would it be?
Well, 99
or Japan.
99 stands out, but as Lance is still one of the defining moments in the history of Irish rugby. Yes. But since then, I would say losing the game to your buddies in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to reading it and talking about it again.
Cheers.
Brendan Fanning, author and journalist. Brent Pope.
Thank you very much.
Punditry legend. Thank you for coming into the studio. We got, like, I don't even have to comment on YouTube to say that. So thank you for coming in, Brent. And appreciate your time. And Quinny as well, down in Melbourne. The Lions have won the series and they won it 2-0. They beat Australia today, 29-26. We've got Camogie Talk out of the semi-finals coming up with Anne Downey here on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Don't go away.
The Saturday panel
on Off the Ball, brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care, proud sponsors of the British and Irish Lions. Upgrade to Dove Men Plus Care, because care changes everything.